Welcome everybody to another week of Sunday School, online Sunday School. Thanks again for joining us. And our class, we've started a new class, is called Encounters with Jesus, particularly those episodes from the Gospel of Mark, Mark's Gospel. They are like we said last time in our introduction that the Gospel of Mark is a bit like a docudrama. Like if you watch a documentary of Winston Churchill's life, you'll see various episodes. Producers will splice together excerpts from speeches and excerpts from him walking around and looking at destroyed buildings during World War II and so forth. And the Gospel of Mark takes different episodes from Jesus' life, and it's very fast-paced, a lot of action words, a lot of drama, various teachings from Jesus, and the main unifying element is protagonist of the gospel, which is Jesus Christ himself. We see this in the first verse, Mark 1:1, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. So Mark's gospel conveys the identity, the truth about the identity of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and then the eternal significance of his life, death, and resurrection. So we're looking at various episodes from the gospel of Mark, from his life, encounters with Jesus that help reveal more about who Jesus is and also nurture our faith and increase our knowledge of his identity and mission. And today we're looking at the story in Mark chapter 1, and we're calling this when Jesus heals the untouchables, and you'll see in a minute what we mean by that. But Mark 1:40 says, a leper came to him, imploring him, and kneeling said to him, if you will, you can make me clean. Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I will be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him, and he was made clean. And Jesus sternly charged him and sent him away at once, and said to him, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded for a proof to them. But he went out and began to talk freely about it, and to spread the news so that Jesus could no longer openly enter a town, but was out in desolate places, and people were coming to him from every quarter. Back in 2013, a relatively unknown woman named Justine Seiko, she's a public relations consultant, was on her way to South Africa. She was about to board this plane for this 11-hour flight, and she posted a poorly worded, insensitive, and easy-to-misinterpret tweet to her 170 Twitter followers. So, again, relatively unknown woman, just 12 words. It said, going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white. And then she turned her phone off. And when her plane landed in South Africa, she fired back up her phone and discovered that in that 11-hour flight, her words had gone viral. That in just a few short hours, she had become an international headline and labeled a bigot, an ignorant racist, and much, much worse. On the basis of those 12 words, a very careless mistake on her part, obviously, she lost her career. She was fired and lost everything. And as she looks back on the incident, she reflected, said, I had a great career, I loved my job, and it was taken away from me. And there was a lot of glory in that. Everybody else was happy about that, meaning everybody just piled on and made life miserable for her. So imagine for a moment, your entire life, all that you've worked for, all that you have done is just vaporized by a single careless mistake. And those who brought you down, they've never met you, they've never looked you in the eye, they'll never be held accountable for turning your life upside down. And part of this is because Justine Seiko lives in a culture that idolizes career and money and personal advancement, where our worth and value is measured by our competence and productivity. And it's also a culture that takes pride in tearing down self-important people and shaming them. And then there's this pile on, there's sort of this witch hunt where we love to take down anybody who's labeled or seen as intolerant. And when Justine lost her job, it was as if she became a modern-day leper, an outcast, stigmatized, shunned. That's what a modern-day leper is like, an outcast. Shunned and shamed. That became the refrain of her life. Just cast upon the garbage heap of society. So in our passage today, Jesus is dealing with what we would call someone who is a true untouchable, a man who had been confined to the rubbish heap of society because of this wasting disease. And I can't help but find irony, parallels, whether I should or not, in today's current climate with this COVID-19. It's as if we've all become untouchable. We've all become isolated from one another. But we encounter Jesus' compassion and his authority over death and disease. Again, we're studying these encounters that people have with Christ. And what can we learn about Christ and his identity and his mission? So first we hear the leper's plea, and then secondly we see Jesus' pity. The leper's plea and Jesus' pity. So first of all, the leper's plea, that's in verse 40. It says, a leper came to him, imploring him and kneeling. Now, what was his problem? Not really clear what this man's ailment was. Leprosy was sort of an umbrella term for all kinds of ailments. It encompassed a number of skin diseases. If at your leisure you would like to read an ancient manual on dermatology, just go to Leviticus 13 and 14, and you will see the vast array of afflictions, over 70 ailments that would all come and be defined as leprosy. So this wasn't necessarily what we know modern day as Hansen's disease, our modern term for leprosy, which is usually rare and is curable and treatable. It could have been a form of eczema or psoriasis or any number of ailments. But what it had done is it had isolated this man. Lepers were isolated. So associated with leprosy came isolation and uncleanness. He's isolated. Their disease was considered highly contagious, incurable, so they were quarantined. Leviticus 13:46 says the leper shall live alone, kept at a distance, socially ostracized from family and friends, dependent on the charity of others. Loneliness was their only companion. They were shunned, excluded, humiliated, and they were unclean. So touching a leper carried a similar consequence to touching a corpse, touching a dead body. They were considered the living dead. When Miriam was stricken with leprosy after her failed coup with Aaron against Moses back in Numbers chapter 12, someone said, let her not be as one dead whose flesh is half eaten away. So a leper was considered a walking corpse. They've been given the death sentence. So if you contacted a leper, just even casually, unintentionally brushed up against them in a crowd, you became ceremonially unclean. Their uncleanness transferred to you. And you could only re-enter communal life when a priest declared you clean. So there were very specific regulations in the law for restoration and restoration to the community. So you had to live outside the community. So lepers were naturally outcasts. They were outsiders. They had to wear torn clothing and keep their hair unkempt and cover the lower part of their face and cry out, unclean, unclean. We read that in Leviticus 13. So the social rejection, the fear of catching what they had, made leprosy this dreaded disease. There was a missionary doctor in the 20th century named Dr. Paul Brand. He ministered to lepers in India for a good bit of his missionary career, and he called leprosy a painless hell. He did a lot of hand surgery and transferal of ligaments and so forth, and he discovered that the rotting flesh that often accompanied the Hansen's disease was really the result of the loss of pain. The disfigurement came because the body's warning system of pain was destroyed, so the disease brought numbness to various parts of the body, especially the extremities, so a leper might unknowingly wash their face with scalding hot water or grip a tool so tightly that their hands became traumatized. So this leper that meets with Jesus is unclean, unapproachable, untouchable. Maybe a modern parallel would be society's attitude toward the AIDS virus back in the 1980s, towards HIV, where people were afraid because they didn't know what caused the disease or how contagious it was, and it seemed to show up in particular groups of society, and the fear and uncertainty caused others to move away from friends and family who had contracted it, even those who had contracted it innocently. And again, I note some of the parallels of what we're facing today with this coronavirus. What often accompanies those who have it, they are isolated, considered highly contagious, they're untouchable. You don't go anywhere near them without all kinds of protective equipment. That is, people who are known to have this virus. I remember several years ago, one of the most dramatic chapel services that I ever attended at my Christian college was when a man gave his testimony. The man's name was Jerry Thacker, and he informed us that he, his wife, and his daughter had all become HIV positive. And when his wife had delivered their second child, she required a blood transfusion. I think this was in the 1980s, before blood transfusions were highly regulated, and the blood had been contaminated with the HIV virus. And the wife, the newborn child, the husband, all wound up with the disease. And all of us, after hearing that testimony, so he had contracted the disease in the 80s. We were listening to his testimony then in the 1990s, when still a lot was relatively unknown about the virus. And all of us just left chapel that day stunned and in shock, because it felt like, because there was so much unknown about the disease, that this man had been given a death sentence. As far as I know, the man is still alive today. He's sort of a modern day Job. But that whole idea of being unclean, shunned, rejected, kept at arm's length, a living corpse, that was the dreaded life of a leper. And we see in the Gospels, when Jesus performs miracles, they are pictures, they are parables of his redemptive work among humanity. So when he would heal the blind man, that displayed his power to illuminate darkened hearts. When he healed the dead, when he raised the dead, proclaimed his life-giving power. When he fed the 5,000, that was a picture of his ability to give eternal sustenance and be the bread of life. What does leprosy symbolize? Leprosy symbolizes sin, uncleanness, defilement. And sin, like leprosy, separates us from others, separates us from God. So think of leprosy as this outward visible sign of inward corruption, an outward visible sign of inward corruption. It was a heinous disease that spread slowly and unstoppably. Its destructive capacity was pervasive. And the same could be said for our moral depravity. Its destructive power is unparalleled. It brings decay and spiritual rot to the soul, makes us walking corpses. When the Countess of Huntingdon, Selina Hastings, she was known as the Queen of Methodism. Selina Hastings, she used her wealth and her influence to promote George Whitefield's ministry. She would often be seen at his meetings and listening to his preaching, and would often invite her wealthy friends to come with her and hear Whitefield preach, and she played a prominent role in the Great Awakening. But Countess Huntingdon once invited a friend of hers, a wealthy friend, the proud Duchess of Buckingham, to hear George Whitefield preach. And the proud Duchess, after hearing Whitefield's sermon, said something like this. She said, "It is monstrous." That's a strong word. "It is monstrous to be told that you have a heart as sinful as the common wretches that crawl the earth. This is highly offensive and insulting, and I cannot but wonder that your ladyship," referring to Selina Hastings, "that your ladyship should relish any sentiment so much at variance with high rank and good breeding." So it would seem the less we know that there's anything wrong with us, the more full-blown our sin leprosy is. And so we see this leper who had no such inhibitions, who knew all of the problems associated with disease, who had experienced this life of being an outcast, an outsider. And he acknowledges his problem. He cries for help and he pleads for mercy. In verse 40, the leper came to him, imploring and kneeling, said to him, "If you will, you can make me clean." Now, those who come to Jesus acknowledge certain things. We see this repeatedly in the Gospels. They acknowledge that they are overwhelmed, that they need help, that they are weak and poor and afflicted, that they are helpless. They can't save themselves. They can't heal themselves. You see it in this leper's posture. This is almost as if he's prostrate on the ground before Christ, kneeling, imploring, begging, pleading. This prolonged humiliation that he has experienced, captured very well with the hymn writer's phrase, "Nothing in my hands I bring, simply to the cross I cling. Jesus, I have nothing. I cannot heal myself. I cannot rescue myself. I'm alone. I'm isolated. I'm an outcast." If you've ever traveled to a third world country, you've probably encountered beggars. And many years ago, when I traveled to Bangladesh, the beggars there were plentiful. And what impressed me about them was how quiet they were. I know that's not always the case, but in this case, I was sometimes just pressed in on all sides by these beggars, stealthily, quietly, muttering, moaning, hushed, pleading. They would hover and surround you, and I was told, don't give them anything, don't talk to them, don't look at them. To give money to one would summon dozens more, like giving food to a seagull on the beach. And you find these needy people come to Jesus. They are overwhelmed. They need help, and they're poor and afflicted and helpless. And they realize that Jesus can help. They say to themselves, this man does good things, and he helps people, and he is a friend of sinners, and he can help me. And perhaps they don't have the sophisticated understanding of who Jesus is that we do because of the wealth of revelation that we have in the fullness of Scripture. You know, at this point, this leper has not read John 1 because John 1 has not been written, so he doesn't have an involved understanding of the deity of Christ, perhaps. Romans, the first few chapters of Romans have not been developed yet and have not been written, and so he probably doesn't have a sophisticated understanding of justification and sanctification. But what does he know? He knows that Jesus is good, that Jesus is powerful, that Jesus helps people, and that he uses that power constructively, and that Jesus could help him. And so the needy person then comes and pleads for help, like this beggar. I need help. This man can help me. Help me, Jesus. And so the leper says, if you will, you can make me clean. And when he asks that, if you will, he's not questioning Jesus' ability, I don't think. What he's questioning is Jesus' willingness. This man has been a social pariah his whole life, for most of his life, an outcast, stigmatized. Children probably ran from him in the streets. Maybe his own family had thrown him out of the home because he was unclean, banished to a life of isolation and loneliness. Would Jesus reject him too? Did Jesus think he was a worthy candidate for healing? Lord, if you are willing. And he pleads for help. And what we find is this beautiful response from Christ, the Lord's pity. So the leper's plea and now the Lord's pity. Jesus shows himself to be the great physician who is eager and willing to heal in verse 41. Moved with pity, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I am willing, be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. One translation actually says here that the NIV says that he was indignant. Perhaps Jesus was angry at the brutal effects of sin upon humanity, the ravages of the disease, the prolonged suffering of this poor leper, the communal reproach that he has endured, and Jesus is ready to do battle with the forces of evil. We saw last time in 1 John 3:8, Jesus came, he appeared to destroy the works of the devil. And so he's now taking on death and disease and the devil, the end result of a sinful, fallen world. And Jesus could have spoken a word, could he not, and healed this man. But what does he do? He reaches out his hand, stretches out his hand, and he touches this man. He touches the untouchable one. To touch this man would have meant that you would have been unclean. And you often see Jesus making contact with people in the Gospel of Mark. When Jesus healed Peter's mother-in-law earlier in Mark chapter 1, he took her by the hand and raised her up. Here he takes this leper by the hand, reaches out his hand to touch the untouchable. When he heals Jairus' daughter in Mark 5, he takes her by the hand and says, arise. Mark chapter 6, as he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. This was something the Lord delighted to do. Sinclair Ferguson says that by touching the leper, Jesus was really saying, I'm prepared to become by choice what you are by nature, a man under the judgment of the law, in order to share with you what I have, freedom and life. So even here you see something of the exchange, the great exchange of the gospel. Jesus, this man was under the condemnation of the law. He could not go out. He was isolated, declared unclean, perpetually unclean, ceremonially unclean. And Jesus, by these actions, showed that he's willing to take his place, as it were, to share in that nature of the judgment of the law. He's unafraid to move toward the downcast and the downtrodden and the shamed, not to magnify their shame, but to identify with sinners, not by sinning himself, of course, but taking their place. His love, his mercy, his power are such that his touch, instead of making Jesus unclean, actually makes the leper clean. That's what it says about the matchless power of the Son of God, reversing the direction of this man's impurity. So instead of becoming contaminated himself, Jesus, his power brings purity and healing and cleansing from defilement to this leprous man, publicly restoring him in the community, removing that reproach that had rested upon him. And what's interesting here is that these healing words, "I will be clean," are then followed by a very stern charge. Maybe Jesus sensed that this man was a bit chatty, a little too talkative, and so he issues this sternly worded charge in verse 43. Jesus sternly charged him and sent him away at once and said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded for a proof to them." But what does this man do? He's so happy, he's thrilled that he's healed. He goes out and begins to talk freely about it and to spread the news so that Jesus could no longer openly enter a town but was out in desolate places and people were coming to him from every quarter. Why would Jesus want to keep his identity a secret at this point? Why not send this man out as a walking billboard, as an advertisement of his power and glory? It had to do with timing. It had to do with identity. Jesus was not ready to reveal his true identity yet. The timing was important. The Jewish people, we know, were looking for a political Messiah, someone who would free them from the tyranny of Roman oppression. And that was not Jesus' mission. That was not why he came. He came to seek and save the lost. Even if he did deliver them from Roman oppression, that deliverance would be temporary. They would still need eternal deliverance. They would still need to be given eternal life. They still needed living water. They still needed the bread of life. And the crowds were so fickle, so easily misguided, so easily misunderstood. They're starved for entertainment. We'll see in Mark's gospel that the crowds are often portrayed negatively because they hinder Jesus' work. They get in the way of his true mission. Sometimes they block access to people who need to get to Jesus. They flood the streets so that Jesus is so cramped and pressed he cannot get to the truly needy. And so he tells this leper to say nothing. Don't broadcast what's happened, because it may foment rebellion among the people and get him in trouble with the authorities. Would create misunderstanding and misguided expectations. And we do this at times. At times it's prudent to be silent about the whereabouts of certain Christian workers who are working in sensitive places. We might pray for a missionary, but we do so anonymously. We don't broadcast their name to the world or where they are located, so we're being discreet. And there are times when the Lord would have us work quietly rather than noisily and publicly. But you see, this leper is disobedient. Jesus sends him to the priest for proof of healing. This would have been in fulfillment of the Old Testament law. Jesus had respect and consideration for the law. He urges this leprous man to go show himself to the priest. The priest would then confirm his healing and restore him to the community. And what's interesting to note here is that the law cannot cleanse the leper. The law can condemn him and show him to be unclean, but it cannot cleanse him. It wasn't able to save him or change him or heal him. But what the law was powerless to do, Jesus could do. And we cannot keep the law in the law's strength. It has power only to condemn, not to change us or energize us or heal us. When do we keep the law? We keep the law once the healing touch of the Savior has entered our lives. So once Jesus has healed this leper, he sends him to go fulfill the requirements of the law, which is go to the priest and be confirmed in his healing. John Bunyan had a little poem and says this rather sweetly. Bunyan's poem says, "Run, John, run. The law commands, but gives neither feet nor hands. Better news the gospel brings. It bids us fly and gives us wings." And some people say the leper was justified in his enthusiasm. Here he'd been freely delivered. He wanted to spread the good news. He wanted to talk freely about what good things had happened to him. We should be happy for him. But really, we're getting a picture again of the gospel. There is substitution here. What does Jesus do? Jesus takes the burden, the weighty burden of this man's disease, in particular the social isolation, the social ostracism, creating an extra burden for himself, Because now we're told that Jesus could no longer enter a town openly. Jesus could not preach in the towns as he would like. We read that in verse 45. Jesus could no longer openly enter a town, but he was out in desolate places. People were coming to him from every quarter. So how does the story begin? It begins with Jesus on the inside, the lepers on the outside. He's excluded, shunned, shamed, isolated, unclean, rejected. How does the story end? The story ends with Jesus on the outside. He's now in the desolate places. The leper has been restored to his community. It's as if Jesus and the leper have traded places. And it's a fulfillment of what Isaiah 53 said about Jesus, that he would be numbered with the transgressors, bearing the reproach and uncleanness of others. The leper was cleansed, restored. Jesus was then pushed further out of the community. Because this young man could not keep his mouth shut, he had to tell everybody about all of the good things that Jesus had done for him. So the story begins with the leper crying, "Unclean, unclean." But after he meets Jesus, he's now singing, I'm clean, and Jesus has made me whole. And that power, that same authority and power, is available to you. Perhaps you realize the way that the leprosy of sin has infected you. It's infected all of us. It pervades all of us. And yet we're told in 1 John 1:7 that the blood of Jesus Christ cleanses us from all sin. So if you want that cleansing, you go to him, you humble yourself, and you plead before Christ, "I know you are willing. Please make me clean."